My God, what the hell's going on here? Hi, everybody. I'm Betty Ann Zetz, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I'm one of those women that forced my husband to make a free decision. Either you go to AA, or I'm going to take you for everything you ever dreamed of having or ever wanted in your life, you know. I was the original Al-Anon stalker. I'm just, you know, and November is Gratitude Month. And so when I came in the program in October 21st, 1974, you know, I was like on my knees, you know, what the hell am I going to do with this alcoholic in my life? And those kids that I don't know why I had those kids, but anyway, you know. But my life was like the alcoholics, as Jeff talked about last night. He gave a great talk. I wasn't there, but I heard it was a great talk. He knows we love him in a very special way. I really want to thank all the alcoholics that are here. I really do. If it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Lois having a big pissed-off resentment toward him, there wouldn't be any Al-Anon, let me tell you. She loved an alcoholic, you know, just like we do that are here in this room today. You know, alcoholism really affects our lives, but the fact of it is that we have a spiritual program based throughout the world, 207 countries, and today based here in Hawaii. Can you believe this? Can you really believe this? It's like Lois Wilson said, you know, the New Orleans International, when she was introduced and she was walking down in the Superdome in that huge aisle and everybody was on their feet pounding and clapping and carrying on for 20 minutes. Our hands were raw. And then she got up there and they put that little, you know, step stool for her. And, you know, she was in her 90s. And I remember getting up there and we were just all so excited and she got up there and she finally got everybody to sit down and she was very hunched over with osteoporosis and she said, how can anyone deny there's a higher power? And that's what we're doing here today. How can anyone deny throughout the world last night at the countdown or count around or whatever you guys did. But anyway, where in the hell are you from? But I want to share something with you is that the gratitude I have for Alcoholics Anonymous and for Kathy and her committee name for being able to pay for us to be here. And my gratitude toward Alcoholics Anonymous and this convention. And I know that it's, you know, it's tough for Al-Anon. It's tough for them to be able to, you know, pay the registration, do the Al-Anon. It's tough for AA, especially in the recession and what's going on. But there's always what AA and Al-Anon and Al-Anon tells us, you know. There's always, well, what they say, and really as Bill sees it, it says, alcoholics have a greater earning capacity than most people. So I told Bob, bye, my Bob. But I really want to thank Kathy. I want to thank the AA committee. But I really want to thank a couple of women that have been in my life for a number of years. And that's Judy and Carolyn. This is your Oprah and Gail of Hawaii. I'll tell you, these two are like the Bobbsey twins, I swear to God. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for always being here for the Hawaii Convention, always, and their committee of the people that are here at this convention of the Al-Anon that really, you know, supports us. And I really, and you know, it's really interesting to come here and to meet Tom, our delegate name from Hawaii, and his wife, who's, I mean, she's a real alcoholic. I'd have been pissed off at him, too. But anyway, I'd have drank if I married him. No, but the people that are serviced, like, you know, Judy and Carolyn and the World Service people here that go around throughout the world and the United States, their travels, and to carry the message, even in Hawaii. I mean, they represent your state. AA's from here represent your state. And then you have a lot of our people from the mainland that came over here that retired. You know, my friend, I ran into Ingrid today. She's a real Al-Anon. And she's one of those nice ones. You know, that kind of Martha Stewart type, dresses nice, doesn't say a bad word, like me. And you know, for her to come out, you know, she married a normie. I don't know what the hell that is. But anyway, But I'm so grateful for that because, you know, she grew up in Al-Anon in my area in Woodland Hills, and that's my home group. But I really want to share with you, where's my Kleenex and my water? But anyway, I really want to share with you, this is really special for me because... Thank you very much. Get a steady hand. My daughter's here. This is the one... My oldest daughter, Kimberly, is here. And she's a great member of Al-Anon. She's married to an alcoholic who she forced to make a free decision to marry her. And because those alcoholics take their time about marrying you, you know, when they're sober. They, you know, I'm in this relationship 5 years, so... And you missed her story yesterday morning. I mean, she shared at the Al-Anon opening meeting yesterday morning, and I was like dumbstruck because she was nice about me and wasn't bad. But she gave a great talk, and that's what I dreamed of when I first came into Al-Anon, that my family would be restored to sanity, what our steps tell us, you know. That's step two that would restore us to sanity. And it's about family. You know, the family disease of alcoholism. And so she just turned 50 this year, and I only turned zero. That's one of the women I sponsored said, you're going to be 70 in December. Well, we're having a party, and it's called a zero party. We all go back every time we hit 50, 60, 70. We all go back to zero. So I'm just, you know, I'm not old. But anyway, I just want to really thank Kimberly for coming and for sharing. And for being, you know, my guest here this weekend. Thank you, AA, for doing that. And for the healing process. Because, you know, those were the promises in Al-Anon when I came in. You know, when I saw, you know, parents get up there and they'd have their kids sober in AA or their kids were in Al-Anon or Alateen and all that. She was a great Alateen member. She's a great Al-Anon member. She's married an alcoholic and has raised my two grandchildren. You know, which one's off to college and which she's incessantly talking to on a daily basis and which I'm grateful for because I missed all that with her. See, she grew up in Al-Anonism and alcoholism with me. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't my husband's, you know, problem. It was my problem. That's what my kids had a problem with. And so I'm just absolutely grateful that you're here, Kimberly. You gave a wonderful, wonderful talk. And, I ran into Bob, another Bob. Oh my God, I have Bobs in my life. My first husband was Bob, and when I divorced him, I married another Bob, and now I got another Bob in my life, you know, from Vegas, and he's going to give a great talk tonight, and he's a really good friend of Al-Anon. He and Jeff, they're good friends of Al-Anon. Really good friends of Al-Anon. These are the guys that go around the country, and they always share good things about Al-Anon. He told me a joke about Al-Anon last night, but I don't remember it, so I'm going to tell you my own. That's what happens when you go back to zero. And I remember this in my first meeting, and I don't want anyone to ever forget. They say that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I look at the Orange County people, and they're all in their, you know, Donna Karens and their nice things, and then all of a sudden they're on the beach meeting with you this morning. The AAs had like 60 people there and we had 5 Al-Anons. But who cares when 2 or more gathered together? I got the gift this morning. Kimberly and I got the gift this morning of Janet, you know, being coming out there, bringing her chair, didn't bring me one. And, But that's the gifts that we have here, you know, and the gifts of the weekend. It's no matter where we meet or where we're at, we all share that same common bond. Our lives have been deeply affected by alcoholism. And now my life has been not only been deeply affected by alcoholism, but also from addiction with my daughter, the addict and the alcoholic. And I'll share a little bit about that with you as we go down the road here. I was born in a family, you know, from Wisconsin. In Chicago, I was born in Chicago, but I went through that life. You know, my father's an alcoholic, and he's 90 years old, and he's still an alcoholic. you know, who never sought recovery, doesn't believe in a higher power. And, you know, I always hear in A and Al-Anon, you die like you live, and you die from this insanity, sobriety, or death. And my father might be sober or anything, but he's dying a spiritual death. And that, you know, that being part of that, being part of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and now the concepts in Al-Anon that I practice within my family, and, you know, that is a healing force for good for me, to be able to, I mean, to have those steps in my personal life and those traditions in my personal life. Because when you heard Kimberly share yesterday morning, she shared what her, like Chuck Chamberlain wrote that book, A New Pair of Glasses, and him and Elsa were such wonderful AA and Al-Anon members, but he wrote that New Pair of Glasses. And when I heard my daughter share yesterday morning, I again saw through her eyes and through her voice, you know, which you allow here, which you allow us to have a voice and to be able to share our experience, strength, and hope with you. But I saw through her eyes, and I really prayed about it this morning because I thought I'm going to try to have a meaningful conversation with Kimberly about what I did to her, you know, how I damaged her or, you know, broken her or beat the shit out of her or whatever, you know. But, you know, I was able to have a conversation with her. Not only about the past, but also in our behaviors in the present and how we heal that through Al-Anon. And it just takes time. It takes time. And it takes the actions that we take in here. We were at a meeting yesterday and we heard this, one of the people that shared in the Al-Anon meeting, she shared about minding your own business. And she said, yeah, you need to have a business and then you need to mind that business. Who said that? I don't know if she's here or not, but it was, we like that quote. But anyway, I was in this alcoholic family, and I just thought that was kind of normal, except, you know, when the guns would go off and my mother would be, you know, crazy and whatever. Anyway, I lost my mother when I was 6 years old. She was driving home from work, and she was pregnant with twin boys, and she wanted to rush home and to make dinner for, you know, for me, and we lived in a little trailer park across from O'Hare. When it was an Air Force base, my father was in the service, retired from the service, and, you know, I had to give him, you know, that credit, you know, for him not only serving our country, being a patriot, you know, but, again, I look through that, not only through the steps and through the traditions with my father. But anyway, she didn't come home that night, and that started my Al-Anonism. That started for me, you know, that disease of alcoholism, how it gripped me and held me in anger and resentment and how it affected my life. Anyway, she didn't come home that night. And apparently what they had is, I didn't know she was pregnant, and apparently what they had was a party for her because she was leaving work. She was 9 months pregnant with twin boys. And she was leaving work. She did something what Al-Anons do. And of course, my mother never knew about Al-Anon then. But what she did is that there was a lady after the party that said, would you drop me off at this train station that my mother would normally not go to? And my mother, I found out many years later, did not really like this person. So I understand our literature, which is written by all of us, you know, by Al-Anons, and AA writes their own literature also, which I'm so grateful for, comes to prove literature. And that my mother, again, you know, did something for somebody else that she really didn't want to, and not realizing that was going to be her demise. And that's what I tried to do for the alcoholic. I tried to do for him what he should have been doing for himself. I tried to do the same thing with my daughter, even within the program, that she should have been doing for herself. But anyway, my mother didn't come home that night, and I was thrown into fear, and what happened is that she dropped this lady off at the train station, and with her, you know, rushing home to make dinner for my father, hopefully that he wouldn't go out to the bar that night, she went across the train tracks and another train hit her, and the car was thrown up against a telephone pole, and she was propelled out of the front window, and 9 months pregnant, ended up over at the exit door, and she was killed instantly, and so were my twin brothers. But that was a secret in our family. No one ever told me that until I was in my 20s. They shared that with me. So that had a very pivotal effect in my life. It had a very spiritual effect in my life because I stopped believing in a higher power. I stopped praying, you know. Because I used to always pray, you know, please bring my dad home sober, or, you know, not drinking and not hitting my mother, or, you know, whatever. And all those things, you know, in that little trailer park, you know, was to set me up. I mean, it set me up and anything in a position anything to be spiritually ready for you, as the alcoholics talk about that, to that desperation. We have that desperation also. We have that physical, mental, and spiritual illness also. We have that big hole inside of ourselves that we try to fill, you know, and I tried to fill it with everything that I possibly could. Nothing worked. I used to say I drank with him, around him, and over him, and under him. And that's part of my fifth step. But anyway, so that changed my life. And so when I came into Al-Anon, you know, a number of years later, you know, I went through my first husband. I went through that marriage. My father, we moved out to California. He got transferred to Sacramento. I moved to Reno. I got a job in Reno in an advertising agency. I met my husband in Sacramento, my Germany's father, and his drinking didn't bother me, you know. And but, you know, something else, and Shirley told me that today. She goes, there was always something about you, Mom. Yeah, right. But there was always something about you that you just wanted something else. You wanted something more for yourself. And I thought, that's kind of an alcoholic personality. And that's true, because when we first came into Al-Anon and AA, when I forced Bob to make that free decision, they'd always say, oh, how long have you been sober? I went, I've been sober all my life. It's him, you know. And but she said there was always something. Because, you know, I heard yesterday morning when she talked about, I thought that she thought I didn't love her. I loved her. She was my first child. I loved her so much. But there was something about me that nobody could fix. There was something about me that nobody can fix. And the only thing that fixed me was here, to be with you, to be with my people, to be with Al-Anon, to have a sponsor, and, you know, to do the steps and all that. But, you know, the crisis before that, you know, I went through that marriage. We moved to Seattle out of Reno. You know, it was, I was insane. I love step two, that a God of, you know, can restore us to sanity. I can remember Duffy, you know, God bless his soul, but I remember Duffy used to always talk about looking up words in the dictionary. And boy, I caught that. You know, from every speaker that I heard, I would catch a clue, you know, to find out how deep this spiritual program was. And I remember looking it up in the dictionary, and sanity means just to be restored to sane thinking. But I was insane. I remember one time we were sharing down in New Orleans on a panel, and I was sharing on this panel, and the panel on Al-Anon was obsession. And after I finished sharing on obsession with the alcoholic, this lady of color said to me, she goes, honey, in that New Orleans twang, honey, you are obsessed, you're possessed. And I was possessed. You know, I was possessed for something that was outside of me. I needed something to fill me. So I picked an alcoholic, of course. No, but anyway, but, you know, I went through that marriage, and I created so much chaos in that marriage. I created I had three girls by then. I was separated, you know, then I separated again, and then, you know, I had a baby, and then my husband came back, and you know, when you look at the wreckage of your past in Al-Anon, when you look, you know, I looked at Bob's wreckage of his past. Of course I looked at his past, because I was waiting for him to make amends. And I kept saying to my sponsor, how long does he have to be sober to make amends to me? He goes, Betty Ann, he's making amends by being sober. So, but I continued, 3 years. Okay, when does he make amends to me, you know? She goes, oh, maybe about 5 years. And he's making more, you know, amends, you know. When else is going to happen? What else is going to happen? And she goes, well, have you made amends to him? I said, yes. I do the laundry. His laundry. I pick it up. She goes, what about the spiritual amends, you know? You guys go to meetings together, you know, you participate in you know, the AA functions. You guys, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, And that's what Al-Anon's about. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. You know, they said in the, you know, in 2000, in the turn of the century, it said, the greatest 12-step movements, I mean, the greatest spiritual movement of the 20th century is the 12-step programs. The greatest movement of the 20th century is the 12-step programs for alcoholics and for Al-Anons and for our families, for our kids. But anyway, I went through that marriage and it was humiliating. There was a lot of wreckage of my past, you know, and then 2 weeks before Christmas, my kids were in school and they were little, and I came home from work and I was working as a cocktail waitress, and I was humiliated by that. I'd started a clown business, you know, in the entertainment business. I wanted to be something that I really wasn't. And like Kimberly said, I just was never present. You know, I was never present within myself. And that's what I believe the 11th step is about, is to be present within yourself so that you can carry the message. All Lois and Anne wanted us to do was to carry the message, to help others, you know. But we had to help ourselves first. We had to accept the powerlessness. We had to accept our lives were unmanageable. But I, you know, I made my life unmanageable for 5 years, you know, and then until I met the next Bob. But I did things to my children and to my little kids, you know, that because of the grace of God and because of the program, I was able to make amends to them. But, you know, there's that living amends also that they talk about. They talk about, you know, the spiritual amends, the living amends, and, you know, because I got it all backwards, you know, when I came into the program. I got things a little backwards. I thought, well, if you buy him a car, if you do this, you do that, that will assuage your guilt. And that's what Al-Anons have, is, you know, they have guilt. They have guilt about it. It's really difficult for an Al-Anon to look at her part in it, you know, to really look at her part and, you know, in the responsibility. And that's why our One Day at a Time, the best piece of literature that Al-Anon has, which is written, you know, 50-something years ago, that piece of literature I carry with me all the time, because the first thing I heard in one of my first meetings, and I wrote it down. I wrote down this quote from this lady that I really didn't like. I love you in a special way. And but I wrote it. It says, "We the unwilling, led by the unqualified, have been doing the unbelievable for so long, we now attempt the impossible with nothing." So true. I attempted the impossible with nothing. And I was so unwilling. I was so unwilling because I had no mentors. I had... You know, my father remarried. I had 5 sisters and brothers. They were living in Sacramento. My father retired there, and things were trouble. You know, there was a lot of trouble. And I was very confused, and I was very self-reliant. And, you know, it says in our literature and also in the AA literature, self-reliance is as good as it got, but it eventually fails us. And see, I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when I came into the program. And I read it, and then, you know, to find out about the disease of alcoholism. I don't do big book studies. I don't do anything like that. I read the big book because I know what alcoholism is. And alcoholism, you know, that I have no power over that. But that they have power over that. And they have choices. And I have choices. And they also remain true. It says in Al-Anon literature that, you know, by our change of attitude will be a boundless help for the alcoholic to seek sobriety. So when I met Bob, I really changed my attitude. I was great. I was really great. I was working a cocktail waitress job in Reno. I went back to Reno, took my kids back, then took my kids to my ex-husband. They were back there. And, you know, I was on the downhill slippery slide, let me tell you. I was on a spiritual slippery slide. So I remember this one night when Bob walked into the bar, and I was working late, and I was working 2 jobs, and I had this, you know, I was pitching this, the television station for a deal, and they weren't buying it, and so here I was, this cocktail waitress, and I was just absolutely self-defeated. And Al-Anon, you know, we have the 3 S's, you know, we need someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. And that's what I tell people in Al-Anon. Have those 3 S's, because that self-defeatism, you know, everything about self, you know, is what we do to harm ourselves. And you know, now that, you know, the cliche is too, is that, you know, self-esteem is built by doing esteemable actions. Self-worth is being worthy of the program, you know, of having worth in the program. Like sitting out in that booth, you know, for Al-Anon or for AA, you know, for 12 to 3 yesterday, you know, being of service, whatever. I feel good about myself when I do things like that. But anyway, and I do a lot of really good things, but, because I felt absolutely desperate. So when I met Bob, he came into the bar, you know, he had on a Brooks Brothers suit, smoked a cigar, had a big roll of money, like that, and I was in Reno, and this, it was like a piano bar, like a Billy Joe place. Anyway, he comes in, and he's a real alcoholic, my husband is. If you ever heard his story, he's a real alcoholic. He's the kind of alcoholic that orders 2 drinks, 2 VO on the rocks. You know, and he came in with a blonde with big boobs, like Judy used to be. And, but anyway, I'll be nice. Anyway, I was always jealous of those blondes. And, but anyway, he came in with another lower companion. I heard that in AA right away. I can remember in the AA open speaker meeting, somebody talked about lower companions. I went, yeah, that's what they are. They're lower companions. No judgment. And, you know, I thought, you know, so I served him drinks, and she kept taking his money. Well, she's an alcoholic, too, but anyway, she kept taking my tip, you know, and he was leaving a lot of big tips. I thought, this is great, you know. I tell you, it's like Marianne Turner used to say, the late Marianne, looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, but I thought, this is the right place. This is my ticket, you know, and I can remember going home to my roommate, and you know what? I was in desperation then too. You know, I lost my apartment. I was moving to a friend's house. I was doing the same thing that the alcoholic does, but I did it sober and insane. You know, I ended up, you know, having a roommate living in her house. And you know what? It was humiliating for me not to be self-supporting. I love that seventh tradition. I love that we're self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Once in a while. But anyway, but I was humiliated by that. You know, I really was. And I can remember going home that night and saying, hey, you know what? I met the guy of my dreams. And she goes, oh, what's his name? And I said, I don't know. I can't remember. And I said, but you know what? He's very handsome and has a roll of money. And I said, but he's really tired. She goes, what do you mean by that? I said, well, he slept on the bar. She goes, well, that sounds like a little problem. Mm. Not a problem for an Al-Anon in training. And, but anyway, we started that merry-go-round called denial. He came in the next night, and, of course, I told him about, you know, how, you know, his receptionist, he had a 5-star restaurant, so I thought that was really cool, like a Spago's or, well, now there's a lot of 5-star restaurants. But anyway, you know, I told him, I said, you know, when I served you last night, and you know, I didn't know what a blackout was. Bob didn't even remember last night, and I didn't know, you know, what was going on. When we start talking, he's from Sacramento, I was from Sacramento, and I used to meet him once in a while, and Jay and Casey didn't know it. You know, him and his buddies would all be drinking and carrying on. He had a wife. You know, if you hear Bob's story is that he married, you know, 2 women twice. So I'm his 5th wife, I think, legally. But anyway, hope so. But, you know, it just started, that merry-go-round that we call denial, you know, and that's what it started in the and for 13 months, I was absolutely insane. I never stayed at I went to work for him. And, of course, alcoholics are always friends with their ex-girlfriends or their ex-wives or their ex-children or their ex-in-laws. Or their ex-cars, or, you know, alcoholics never forget their phone number. Now with cell phones, I mean, I would have made it fast here, you know. I mean, I had known where he was all the time, you know. But anyway, so I went to work for him. And, you know, you have that intuition, and they talk about it a lot now and on, you know, that intuition that, you know, there's something wrong with this picture. And especially with my mother-in-law, his mother. His mother worked for us. And her husband, her 5th husband, and his brother was in A&A down in Vegas, and he flew up for the wedding, but he was drinking, and I couldn't understand that, you know. Anyway, it was very complicated. And in the program, we talk about conflicts in our life. Bob said something about that yesterday, about conflicts, you know, and there was all this conflict and turmoil and, you know, craziness. But I was trying to be the best person that I possibly could be because I had a motive. And in the back of the One Day at a Time book, I looked and I saw there's a big line of motives, you know, a lot of pages on motives. But my motive was, you know, I'm going to get this guy, you know, sober, and we got this nice business, get rid of the two wives that keep coming in and these kids of his, and, you know, bring my kids back. And, you know, I live, like Kimberly said, in this different world, this unreality, you know, of no truth, no truth to myself. And that's what the programs teach us in recovery. It really shows us, you know, we have to be truthful to ourselves, and I couldn't do that. But anyway, so this one time, you know, Bob wouldn't come home from the restaurant, so I started coming home from the restaurant. I ordered a Frederick's Hollywood outfit. You know, now they sell them, like, in the stores, but the Frederick's Hollywood outfit had a string here and with tassels on the end. Oh, you had one. Okay. And it had a G-string, it's called, now. And then it had that long crepe paper robe like a Loretta Young. Nobody knows who Loretta Young is, not unless you're over 50. Oh, everybody's waving their hands. And then it had that feathers. And I don't know what kind of feathers. They weren't from a real animal, I promise you that. And then feathers down here, but you could see through it. It was a crepe paper thing. And I had those Cinderella slippers, you know, those high heels, plastic slippers with pom-poms on them. And I put makeup on and ratted my hair. Well, they call it teasing now, but I had my hair all ratted up and had long eyelashes. Because, see, at the restaurant, I was the hostess with the mostest. And all the celebrities came in there, and entertainers came in there, and the governor came in there. Everybody drank at our restaurant. My kids worked in the restaurant and all this kind of stuff. But I was insane. And so I had to straighten the Hollywood outfit on, and then I'd prance around the house and smoke a cigarette, you know, with the French cigarette holder, and then I would to wait for Bob to come home, wait for the alcoholic, and the feathers would be molting, and I would be, you know, all night, you know, catching, you know, they talk about hallucinations with the alcoholic, you know, I was absolutely insane, you know, and I'd catch a feather and burn it, and oh, it was great, you know, and then I throw my Marianne robe, you know, Turner robe on, that chenille number. You know, when you're in Al-Anon, you're waiting for the alcoholic, you know. You're smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. Now they have Red Bull. Man, I'd have had a heart attack and died, you know. I was so hyper-vigilant, you know, anyway. I mean, I was so ADD, you know. But anyway, I was so wired with that coffee, and, you know, and then the cigarette would fall in there, and then I'd be scratching it in certain places. And you can't see it behind the podium. And those tassels would be going, and, you know, but I'd throw on that Marianne Turner bathrobe, and I'd go outside in the middle of the night and rake the leaves and do crazy shit, you know. I mean, take out the garbage cans at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's just something to do. And because he wouldn't, and I'd remind him, Bob's never taken out a garbage can. But anyway, you know, this craziness. And across the street was Harold Smith's house, and his wife was a 500-pound raging alcoholic. And they had a security guard down that sat in front of their house. Because, you know, alcoholics and Al-Anons got to live in the right neighborhoods. And you belong to St. Mary's Guild, and, you know, you look good. You know, you look really good. So anyway, I knew this one night Bob came home, and, you know, I had my Frederick's Hollywood outfit on, raked the leaves up, and it was cold. And he was on the porch. Whittlesey Cab brought him home. Bobby knows Whittlesey Cab. Anyway, and I used to call Whittlesey Cab. I used to keep a calendar. Okay, they've got him at the Continental Lodge. I'd call Whittlesey Cab, and I'd say, listen, I know you have him. They'd go, Whittlesey Cab. I said, I know you have him. It's Betty Ann. I know you have him. Where do you have him? And I could hear the dispatcher going, what the hell? And then I hear the taxi drivers in the back, you know, in the dispatch room going, is that bitch gone again? You know, whatever. And then the guy would feel sorry for me. And I was humiliated. You know, Al-Anons don't walk into an Al-Anon meeting, you know, humble. I was humiliated by my actions. And that's what Al-Anon sponsors did. That's what my meeting did. They had me look at myself, you know, so that my husband could stay sober and be sober. You know, my family could be restored. You know, that's the basis of it, you know, is that we're here and then to be able to restore me to sanity. I got stuck on step 2, thank God. I really did. Step 3, I was a little worried about. But anyway, so, you know, the taxi would bring him home because I stopped, you know, picking him up, and I, you know, wouldn't let him drive the car, took his keys, stood in front of the car, you know, he almost pinned me against the, you know, the garage door by accident, he said. But anyway, so, you know, I pushed him off the porch when he came home. I put the cigar in his mouth, covered him up with the leaves, and said, burn, baby, burn. It was the 70s. What the hell? He didn't burn up, so I had a moment of compassion and went out there and took the cigar out. Thank God he had enough VO in him. And this is the insanity. And my kids were visiting me. This is the insanity that they saw their mother with their, you know, stepfather, this man that I love so much. This is what they're seeing. My kids are seeing. Anyway, that night, about 6 o'clock in the morning, Andy was going to go to school, and I was in my Marianne bathrobe. Bob's still out on the lawn, and, you know, just before they got up, the security officer comes up to the door and knocks on the door, and I answer the door, and so I thought, well, Bob's got up. We can have a meaningful conversation. And I got up, and I went to the door, and I'm in my Fraser Hollywood outfit, and the guy's looking at me, and he says, excuse me, but there's somebody on the lawn. I said, well, of course. Like, that's normal in my neighborhood. And I said, you know, he goes, well, you know, he's on the lawn. And I said, well, go on. Go back to your little car. And see, now Anna talks about that in her opening, about being arrogant, self-righteous. You know, get back in your little car. Here I'm pissed off the security guy because he's calling me on it. And he walked off and he said something that was, that what I heard is that she's really sick. I thought he said, oh, that Bob was really sick being on the lawn, covered up with leaves. You know, not me, but him. That morning, of course, Andy got up, and I was smoking a cigarette. She made her cereal, walked out to go to her little school, and the leaves moved. And Andy turned around and looked at me in the eyes of children. And she looked at me with that look, like, what the heck are you doing, Mom? And she was so humiliated and embarrassed, and met her little friend, Leslie Conklin, and they walked off. And that was the morning that I made a decision. Because there had been many nights, many times that I would do that, you know, to go look for Bob, go to the blackout bar at Harris, drag him out of the bar, up the stairs, you know, I'd have clothes on, and drag him up the stairs, and what the hell are you doing down in the blackout bar? And it wouldn't be Bob, you know, well, you know, who are you? And, you know, that guy could have been part of my fifth step, too. But anyway, but that humiliation, again, there was something missing. And I remember going into the bathroom, and I kept thinking of my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law, you need to go to Al-Anon. You're really sick. No, I'm not sick. You know, there's nothing wrong with me. But that morning, I knew in desperation I needed to call Al-Anon. And Bob had been out all night long. And, of course, he didn't want to come home. But I didn't go that night. I wasn't that desperate. It had to be the next week. And the next week, and then I left the restaurant, left him down there drunk. But I had a new awakening that I didn't know that was happening to me. And when I left the restaurant, I went home to take the babysitter home, and left my little girl there with the dogs. I remember driving, you know, on, in fact, in California Avenue, and I stopped at California Avenue, Mount Rose. I'll never forget it. And stopped at the stoplight, and it was 1:30 in the morning, and the light wouldn't change. And when the light wouldn't change, I just went through it. You know, I'm from Reno. I have this big restaurant, you know. That arrogancy again. And a cop came around and pulled me over. And I got out of the car, and I called him a bad name. Al-Anons go to jail, too. Fast. You know, you call him the name in the 70s, which, you know, it starts with FP. But anyway, you know, and don't you know who I am? You know, and I'm going to have your job. I wasn't drunk. I was insane. And they took me down and put me in a padded cell. And the fear came into me. My kid's home alone. You know, you get one phone call then. And, you know, that phone call was to Bob at the restaurant. And I finally got the waiter to get Bob. And you know what Bob said to me? And this is what I tell Al-Anons. And it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in chapter 5, A, B, and C, no human power
could relieve us of our alcoholism. Only see God could and would have sought. So I took that, you know, when I got into the program. And I believe that this human power was trying. And he came to the phone and I said, Bob, you've got to help me. You've got to really help me. And he goes, where are you? And I said, well, I'm in jail. And they're going to throw me in a padded cell. He goes, you know what, Finian? You always figure everything else out. Figure this out. And he hung up the phone. You know what's the best thing he ever did for me? Because when my daughter called me from jail and called me collect a number of years ago, Mommy, Mommy, please help me. Please help me, Mommy. And I didn't have to hang up the phone. I could accept the collect call because my sponsor told me I could do that once. And I accepted that collect call, and I can remember telling Amy, I love you so much, Amy, but you need to call somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot help you. It was the toughest thing I ever did. Toughest thing I ever did. But that night, you know, they threw me in the drunk tank and padded cell. They didn't know what the hell to do with me. But I made a decision to call Al-Anon the next morning. And I did call Al-Anon. And I'm so grateful for Mickey B. that answered the phone and talked to me for 2 hours. And she's the one in Ning that told me. She goes, you know, Benny Ann, you got to kick them when they're down. And Al-Anon telling you that? They don't do that anymore. That's not politically correct. It's abuse. You know, and the Al-Anon goes to jail then. But anyway, she goes, you know what? You know, his only hope is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and so I got ready for that. I got ready for that and had the courage. I mean, after I talked to her, thank God for our answering service. Thank God that Al-Anon answered the answering service. Thank God it's not, well, just push button number 2 if he's a real alcoholic. Push number 3 and then if it's S-A or B-A or pick your nose A. You know. But anyway, and when Bob came home that morning, Bob can say this in his talk. He said he knew something was different about me. And he did. I took him to Alcoholics Anonymous. I drove him. And I took him to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we went to that Sunday night VA hospital meeting where the Thorazine shuffle was going on. But you know, yeah, you've been there. And, you know, but again, I separated myself. I'm not like those people, but I wanted what you had. I wanted what those AAs were talking about. And then I met those Al-Anon. They had men there. Al-Anon men. Ooh, that's weird. And they had alcoholic wives, you know. But something happened to me at that first AA meeting. But the biggest thing that happened to me was that Monday night Al-Anon meeting in Reno. I walked into that room, and I made sure Bob went in the back room to the AA room where they had coffee cups, and which we had to wash. I loved it. I loved it. And, but something happened to me in my Al-Anon meeting. And I hear that out of Al-Anons all over the world. Something happened. And a lot of Al-Anons tell me, they said, you know, I don't remember my first meeting. I remember everything. I'm an Al-Anon who remembers everything. You know, I wrote it down. But anyway, something happened to me at that meeting when they held hands and they said the Lord's Prayer. And they asked for newcomers to share. And they asked me, would you like to share? And boy, I did. I told them about Bob. All about Bob. And Bob Zahns and Bob, you know, later on in life, all the Bobs. Bob Mormon, I told everybody everything about Bob. But you know, there was the grace of that program. I knew that night that I was going to be okay. And that first year that we were in the program, we had our son, J.R., who today lives in Detroit, Michigan, and today is separated from his wife, who is a problem drinker. And he takes care of his children because of Alateen and because of us being an Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon all these years. My son was able to carry the message. We were able to carry the message to my son by detachment, by allowing my son the dignity to call somebody else, not his mom. To say to my son, I understand. Been there, done that. JR, you got to call an Al-Anon guy. A guy that's been through it, that's got kids. And I said, otherwise, I'm never going to send you a cent again. And that's kind of motivating. And plus, my daughter won't let me. But anyway, my son did. But that first year, the AAs gave us baby showers, and the Al-Anons gave us baby showers. the Al-Anon knitted little blankets thing for me, which I was able to give to my son, his baby blanket, from Al-Anon's that crocheted those in meetings, which we used to really bitch about. And he was able to give it to his son. See, the traditions work in a spiritual manner for our families. Spiritually, it's worked for our families. And then the second year, I was pregnant, and I didn't know it, and I went into an emergency cesarean, and I had twin girls. And they only weighed 3-4 pounds, and they were shocked. My doctor was shocked. He was so glad I was in Al-Anon. Oh, my God. Because they'd all come to the restaurant, and I'd tell my doctor, I think I have brain tumor. And, you live with an alcoholic getting it. No. I have a brain tumor, I'm sure, or palpitations and anxiety and stress. And that's what most Al-Anons now, and since alcoholism and addiction is a generational disease, as Judy talked about, all of us in things that are parents, and grandparents, we see over 30 years, I've been in 38 years, and I see what, the disease of addiction is generational, and alcoholism is generational. But anyway, I absolutely, everybody in the program, my father never came up to visit my children. He was very, excited, that I had twins. But my parents never had anything to do with my 5 children. The disease of alcoholism destroyed our family and our roots and all that. But anyway, what happened with that is that 3 months later, I was feeding that baby and Allison in a... propped her up and went to feed Amy, and I came back and Allison was dead. She died of SIDS. And the first person I called was an Al-Anon, Dottie Dickens. I said, Dottie, please help me. I'm not going to be able to come to the district meeting Wednesday night because my baby just died. And she said the things that Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anons and Al-Ateen say, because my 2 girls were in Al-Ateen. And she said, we'll be right there. We'll be right there. And don't worry about the meeting. We'll be right there. And they were there. Everyone was there for us. And they've been there for us and then for the last 20 years. And for the last 38 years. But for that momentous occasion that happened to us and that defeating, absolutely destroyed, would have destroyed any other couples, especially couples that we worked with afterwards with parents that have lost children. But you know what? They were there for our family. They surrounded our family. They brought food for our family. And then when I got back to my meeting the following Wednesday night, all I did was hold JR, and he was 13 months old then. And I can remember holding JR, and Kimberly and Deanna were in the LRT meeting, and I can remember holding JR, and I just cried through the meeting. I just cried through the meeting. And you know what? The older ladies in Al-Anon grabbed that baby, and they just let me cry. They all kept on with the meeting, but they just let me cry. And then that night, one of the nights, about 2 weeks later, I said, I can't take this. I'm afraid that she's going to die. And they said, that's not going to happen, Betty Ann. Don't worry. Not even that. And that, but I was in so much fear. And again, the steps and the sponsorship, everybody was there for us. But again, what happened for us is that night after I got home from the meeting about 10 o'clock at night, there's 3 of these ladies standing at my door, knocking on my door. And they're in their pajamas, that have feet in them. And, these weird bunny slippers and all this. And Kimberly and Deanna, were taking care of Ambie and JR. And they came in and they had their blankies, And they said, we'll help you out. We'll stay here until we can walk you through this fear. And that's what steps do for us. That's what the fellowship does for us. That's what World Service does for us. It walks us through the fear. Walks us through the fear. They always say that God's in the flesh with us, And my husband didn't have to drink over that. My husband didn't have to drink over the death of his child. My husband found a higher power of his understanding through that situation. But Alcoholics Anonymous was there for us and has been for us through all those years. But anyway, after that, we moved to Texas, and then we moved out to California after New Orleans, after the International. My husband works in the construction business, and then it started happening for us. And what started happening for us, and then is
my older girls, and they moved back to Seattle with their father to finish school out because it was too insane for them in my sober house. We talked a lot about this thing in regards to, you know, my kids were like, they had this impression that we loved AA and Al-Anon and we loved all those people in program more than we loved them. And so by that experience, I was able, to change my type of sponsorship that I do for the women I sponsor that have young children, that have husbands that are newly sober. You know, I'm able to share with them my mistakes, the things that we made within the program. That's what's so devastating. I think being in the program and having the knowledge and not taking the actions and not seeing what your children, even if you're sober and you're clean and you're an Al-Anon and you're, you know, whatever, you know, the amends that I had to make to my children have to be a living amends, not also a written and a direct amend, you know. And so did Bob. We had to take a really deep look at that when my daughter, one time in her program, she had to cut off all communication with us, you know, with her family. She had to process what she, that's the new word, process what she needed to go through, through the program, through the steps, through outside help. But we're able to discuss that today, only because of you. And also, you know, when Amy started, she started her road to destruction. You know, I was able to name through sponsorship and name through Sally Carpenter and Keith Carpenter, you know, that really raised my kids, you know, really, you know, were there for us. I mean, you know, our sponsors were always there for us. I don't sponsor Hop. I don't sponsor Chan. I've had two sponsors. They both have passed. You know, I've had the grace of naming to walk them through their deaths and to be part of that process of death. And, you know, like Paul, What's-Her-Face was telling me, you know, we're talking about making up all the, you know, the medical stuff and all that. Who just lost her husband. God bless her. Lost her husband. You know, Kay Brewster lost her husband this year. Lil, you know, people have lost their husbands. You're able to show us how to, normal people don't know how to handle that kind of stuff. Well, some normal people do. But we have a spiritual solution for that, a spiritual walking through that. But then I saw Amy, and I saw what Amy had to go through, you know, what she went through. And there was something that I thought that Bob and I were missing in regards to, you know, there's a lot of guilt involved in that. You know, why is our daughter, you know, why is our daughter? Why is she affected by this disease of addiction? Why is she affected by these men in her life? You know, when she was sober and going to Alcoholics Anonymous in the Pacific Group, she did very, very well. Kimberly was saying yesterday how talented she was and how, you know, I mean, what a wonderful young woman that she is. But you know what? There's something about addiction that we can't stop. It's like that powerful train, you know, that, you know, we got to get out of the way. And that's one of the greatest gifts that I learned. That's why we started the Parent Al-Anon Parent Focus meetings, because at 9 months old, I had to take her son away from her. You know, then she got sober again, and he went to live with her. And he was only living with her 3 months, and one of the guys from AA stopped by her house, and she left him alone, and then, you know, in the crib, and then with some drug addict, you know. And I had to go take him again, you know. And then at 3 years old, he went to live with his father for 9 months. And he lived with his father, who was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's no guarantee, you know. He's a great guy. But you know what? Let me tell you something. When Cole was 4 years old, I took him for the summer, took him every weekend, but I knew something was going on with him too. And his girlfriend had had another baby, and she had a daughter who's now 16 years old and in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who would have known at 9 years old? But anyway, we were baffled. Cunning, powerful, and baffling. That's the disease of alcoholism. And as Al-Anon mothers and Al-Anon, you know, grandparents, you know, we knew that we had to do something. And so that summer thing, I took Cole for the whole summer. And I left him with my daughter for a couple weeks, and I went up to Wyoming to see my son and watch the alcoholism going on there. And that, it was horrible. Anyway, I came back and picked him up, and
I took him back to meet Ted. We always meet in the valley, and Ted drove in, and you know, he was, his eyes were pierced, and he was sweating profusely. Big guy. And you know, now Al-Anon knows. You don't have to smell it, you know. And I can remember looking at him, and I said, Ted, what can we do? There's something going on. You know, all the phone calls, I mean, the cell phones, you know, filled, the mailboxes are filled. And nothing, Mom. Everything's fine. 2 days later, he didn't show up. Then his girlfriend calls me. Bob went, after the Wednesday night meeting, went and picked up Cole. And this is on Monday, we traded him. And then on Sunday morning, his best friend called me and says, hey, Betty Ann, I hope you're sitting down. And I said, why? Why do I need to sit down? I was just on the way out to go to a sponsee workshop. He goes, Betty Ann, he said, they found Ted in his mother's house, and he died of an overdose. And I watched that little boy running around my living room. And his mother was out there, completely loaded and drunk. And I called Helen and I said, would you please help me? I called members of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bob did. Would you please help us? They were over there. And they walked us through that. I had to take that boy away from Amy. And that when we finally found her and she came over to the house, I had to have her sign away, and I had to go through guardianship for my grandson. And I had to, you know, it was a conflict with my daughters, you know, because they had reasonable, you know, fears about it. You know, we're too old, we're too active in Al-Anon. And you know what? We had to change. You can always change in AA and Al-Anon. Bob and I had to change. No more night meetings. Bob, of course, has his night meetings. I'd be home. No more, you know, going to conferences and conventions without Cole, you know. You know, we were offered the ability to change within our program. And what Bob was telling me last night, a little story, about making amends. It's always the opportunity to make amends. But it's also gave me the strength because of the Al-Anon focused parent meetings that we started. And now the Division 5 group on Friday night, we have 125 people come to that group, maybe 130 people, men and women, in Al-Anon. And we have preteen, babysitting, Al-Ateen, and Bill Wilson. We should have listened to Bill. We should have given him to the AAs. But anyway, you know, we have certified sponsors. We have sponsors that are dependable, even with a volunteer program such as ours. These are sponsors that we trust and our children are safe. And how dare people tell us we don't have that right or the traditional right to protect our children and protect our sponsors. They saved my kids' life. They gave them a new perspective. They were our advocates for Bob and I. They were our advocates, the Al-Ateen sponsors were. Then we started another parent meeting in Westlake Village. It's 5 years old next week. Come on over. Celebrate with us. I've raised this grandson. We had to go to court. I had to, you know, get guardianship of him. I had to take a little bit of money that he had, you know, from his late grandmother and put him in trust with an Al-Anon. Trust her with the money because they don't trust me with the money, which is understandable. Alcoholics have a great spending capacity. But anyway, and Amy. That's the understanding of alcoholism and addiction. That's where I learned it in the parent meeting. That's the hardest place to work my program after 35 years, or what, 34 years it was, is, you know, to tell Amy, I trust you'll figure this out. You know, you're not able to live with us. I don't have to say no anymore. Al-Anon taught me I don't have to say no. I have to say, Amy, I trust you can figure this out. I know, Mom. I know. Do you have to call your sponsor? Yeah, you need to go to a meeting because of me. She went through my family. She went through her brother. She conned her brother. She conned her sister after she went to prison. I didn't go to the court. My daughter, Deanna, and her partner went to court. And they saw the devastation and humiliation that my daughter had to go through. You know. And then after she got out of prison, they allowed her to come to their house. And, you know, we mourned them. You know, we shared with them. And it was a big fight. It caused conflict with the alcoholic and the addicts, got us all going around. But a very famous addiction specialist who's on TV said, he tells young people, do not go back to your parents' house, you will die. Because your parents are in fear, and when they're in fear, that projects on you, you take advantage of that fear, and you will be drunk and loaded. You will die in your parents' home. And we called one night, Bob called Clancy, and Clancy wasn't there. Charlotte was on the phone, God bless her soul, just passed. And Bob said, Amy called us from jail, you know, she wants us to bail her out. And Charlotte said, if you bail her out, I'll never speak to you again. Bye. We had to do the tough love, the tough stuff that Al-Anon gave us the courage to do. Because how can I say to my other children, how can I be that example to my other children? I had to keep my grandson away from her. I don't allow her to see my grandson. She's loaded. She's out there. She's struggling. She's going through everybody and everything. One time, you know, I mean, every place that she's been, Friendly House, every place that she's been, she's done that on her own. We've given her the dignity to live up to that. Amy, we trust you'll figure it out. I hate it. I might hate the disease of addiction or alcoholism. And she hates herself. The self-loathing. I know I'm an addict, but I don't want to do what we all do. And that's okay. Love and tolerance is our code. I've learned here in Al-Anon also, and then I have to make those tough decisions. They always call the mother. Just recently she wrote on my Facebook, because she has another daughter that she had through her addiction. And we're not able to see her a lot. Very rarely. But it says in our literature, there is no situation unbearable. No situation so difficult. No unhappiness to be lessened. But I remember those calls. And I remember going to the jail. And I have to remember that. I have to remember, you know, my daughter is affected by the disease of addiction and alcoholism. I have to remember that, you know, she wants to believe that things will be different for her. You know, she wants to be cleaned up. She loves us. She loves her family. But she went through, you know, my daughter and her husband. She tried her best. They gave her so much love and compassion. But she burned them out too. But that's what she has to do. That's the understanding at the parent meetings. That's, you know, what we're trying to get across. Al-Anon is to take care of us spiritually. My daughter talked about that. I got to take care of myself spiritually, financially, self-supportingly. I have to do for, you know, for my family. My husband has to do that too. My husband, you know, the main key is not only Alcoholics Anonymous, but going to the open Al-Anon meetings, me going to the open AA speaker meetings, me participating with you in this privilege of doing this. But also, the fact is that for Amy, where are our children? My grandson, I got to tell you a little bit about that and I'm going to close. Because my grandson, we took him out of public school when he was in the second grade. Because we knew that without a spiritual program, our sponsor told us, he needs to be in a smaller school, a school of faith, not religion. He went to the Boy Scouts. On Wednesday nights. And they were going to have a trip. He'd been in Boy Scouts for about a year. And I asked him, I said, Cole, you know, they're going on this rafting trip and this, you know. And I said to Cole, because I see how the hurt of addiction, his mother, and losing his father, what it's done to him. But you've given me the words. You've given me the compassion and the voice and things to be able to share with him. I could pray with him every night. He's 15 years old and we pray together every single night. He prays for all of you. He prays for Clancy. He prays for my sponsors. He prays for our dead sponsors. He has a down pat. Because we've done something that we didn't do for those girls. We did something on a consistent, disciplined, spiritual basis through the steps of Al-Anon, Alcoholics Anonymous and Alateen. So, I said, Cole, why don't you want to go on this trip? He goes, Grammy, I don't even want to go back to Boy Scouts. I don't want to get my Eagle Scout. I said, why? What's wrong? He goes, because I don't have a dad. Everybody's got a dad, Mom, Grandma. Everybody's got a dad. I said, well, Poppy offered to go. He says, Grammy, Poppy would never make it in that canoe. But Bob was willing. Bob was willing because of Alcoholics Anonymous and of the sponsor. Bob was willing to do whatever he could do for that kid. My husband is 77 years old. His company that he worked for, he worked until he was 75 years old. And he worked in it, that company went down from 300 people to 3. And he started his own little business of the walk-in bathtub so we could support this kid. You know, and what he did is that business was down, you know. My husband told me that he had an interview yesterday as a project engineer that is way below what he does. My husband's going to any lengths in Alcoholics Anonymous and for his family and how grateful that he is that we are here with my daughter to have a healing process, to be able to share with you a worldwide fellowship. And last year when we were in Croatia, we made a trip through Zagreb and went down before we went to see my husband's family, which they've been encouraging him for years to go to Hvar, to his island, where his family comes from 500 years ago. And they have a little convention in Split, in an AA convention, in a Russian hotel. And you know what the Russians, when they were there in 94, it was a mess. And that hotel is still a mess. But Alcoholics and Al-Anons don't give, you know, they don't care. They'll go to any lengths to be with each other. And I got to that, we got to that little convention, and one of the girls that's a Croatian actress that lives in L.A. and lives in Zagreb, she went with us. She was our interpreter. People from all over the world and then came to this little tiny convention. The N.A.s were on one side of the room. I mean, those addicts are nuts. But anyway, they're so much fun. And the A's were over here, and the A's love those N.A.'s, and the N.A.'s love those A's, and, you know. And then there's the Al-Anons, and they come in their little skirts and dresses, and, you know, not their jeans. You know, they come in, and they don't speak the language. They have no literature, except for an Al-Anon and an AA woman member took the courage to change for them, who are Croatian, and they typed it out in Croatian and put it on paper because they don't have literature. That's why you have to support Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. In the basket on Friday night when it goes around, I put all my money in there. You know, they say, you know, break the dollar. What do you mean break the dollar? I haven't put a dollar in a basket for, you know, 39 years, 38 years, whatever. You know, I put in lots of money in there. I put lots of money in the babysitting money, you know. I don't have kids in babysitting. You know, I see alcoholics at my husband's Wednesday night Pacific group meeting. You know, their rents have been raised, and they're putting money in there. But Al-Anons, what do? You know, that's my tithing or whatever to carry that message. Because when you're sitting in a meeting in Croatia of 15 Al-Anons, and then and they're speaking their language, and you have an interpreter, Ennis was telling us what they were saying. And then they asked me, they said, did you know Lois Wilson? Yes, I knew Lois Wilson very well. And if it wasn't for Lois walking out on that patio that night, having that resentment at the night they were getting kicked out of their house, you know, her father's house, her home in New York, and walking out there and looking out on the street, as Lois told us, you know, and it's been documented. She looked out on the street. She was so mad they were in there in AA having a good time and drinking coffee and talking. And she's out there having all this resentment. And she's thinking, oh, my God, you know, I'm losing our home, my family home, and working at Bloom and whatever. And she looked out and saw cars on her street. And that's the miracle of Al-Anon. She saw the car on the street, and she saw a lady on the passenger side. And she walked down there and she knocked on that window, and Ann Bingham rolled down that window, the other co-founder of Al-Anon, who wrote our first piece of literature. And I had the privilege of the last few years of Ann Bingham's life. She retired to her daughter's place in Santa Paula, and we were able to take her to meetings. And she told us all the stories about Bill Wilson never zipping up his zipper and coming down the stairs. And, you know, I mean, all this wonderful, and then playing the violin. And, you know, I mean, it's just wonderful, wonderful history that we have. We are 6 degrees away now. Maybe less than that. You know, but that wonderful woman, you know, saying to Bob, would you like to have some tea? When we were at the house the first time, Bob, you know, never drank tea. Sure. And she goes in the kitchen, she turns around, she goes, aren't you an alcoholic? He goes, Bob goes, yes. She goes, you drink tea? He goes, no, I really drink coffee. She goes to, what's her name, the Pearl. She goes, put on the coffee pot. That coffee pot. That's still there in the house. What a privilege that we have. What a privilege that we are in the 20th century to the greatest spiritual movement. I don't know what's going to happen for Amy. I know that's God. God's got her back. I know that when she went on Facebook this last week, Mommy, I'd love to come home and see Cole's birthday this Tuesday. And I had to write her back and say, I love you so much, Amy. But it's not a good time. I love all of you, and I want to leave you with a prayer that my husband and I put it on my Al-Anon card. And I hope you call me anytime. It's like Bob, Jeff. Anytime you're in California, you know, come to my Al-Anon meeting. You know, come to the, you know, Pacific Group meeting. If you're an alcoholic, my husband would be more than happy to meet you, pick you up, take you to the meeting. But on this card, it says, Dear God, help me to accept the seemingly bad as well as the good, which is necessary for my growth. Thank you so much for my husband, the alcoholic, my daughter who's in Al-Anon, my family that has been affected by this terrible disease. Thank you for all the seemingly bad things that turned out to be the biggest blessing of my life. God bless Hawaii.